Hi, my name is Steve Carlisle from Clearly Training, and this is the first of a two-part podcast on materiality. And the first podcast is fairly generic, aimed at anybody who's interested in the concept of materiality or who works with materiality. And then the second podcast in this series is specifically focused on the public sector in the United Kingdom. So, two-part podcast. The first one covers just general materiality, and the second one covers specifically materiality in the public sector. If you are in the public sector, I would suggest that you listen to this one first and then go on and have a listen to the one specifically targeted at the public sector. So the concept of materiality, what does materiality mean? Well, something is material if it is significant. So something's material if it's significant to what? Well, to what you're looking at. So you might be reporting on the efficiency of a process, and you would presumably conclude that a process was efficient if there were no significant errors in the process. So the problem is we need to define what we mean by significant when we're looking at that process. What would be a significant departure from the process? What would be something that would be so significant to who? Well, to the people that we're reporting to. What would be an error that would be so significant to the people that we're reporting to that we'd have to report that the process wasn't working properly? That's what materiality means. Something is material if it is significant. Significant to the person that you are reporting to. Okay. So significant to the user of the information that you're reporting on. Now, materiality is a concept most commonly applied to financial information, and I first came across the concept of materiality when I was a trainee auditor and then a qualified accountant auditor way back a long time ago in the 1980s. And when I was doing my financial audits, we had to look for errors and inconsistencies in the financial information that we were auditing. And we also had to be very mindful of the fact that small errors, insignificant errors, weren't something we were going to report on when we reported to the shareholders in our audit report. We were only interested in the significant errors that we came across. And it was absolutely fundamental that before we went on that job, the manager or the partner responsible for the job set out in the first instance what was meant by significant. It's no good finding an error and then deciding at that point whether it's significant or not. You need to set your benchmark, your criteria, before you actually undertake the report, the audit, whatever it is that you're doing. So you need to decide on materiality right at the beginning of the process that you're auditing. In the financial context then, when I was an auditor, an item will or won't be significant or material dependent upon its financial value. So when we're doing a financial audit, we were very concerned with financial values. But materiality doesn't just apply to financial values. And later on in the podcast, we'll be looking at other uses of the materiality idea when applied to non-financial concepts. So materiality levels, first of all, differ from entity to entity. If you're a large entity, what's significant to you or what's material to you will be larger than what's material or significant to a smaller entity. So choosing a materiality level will be a subjective judgment. Now, there are some benchmarks, some criteria that we can use in order to pick a materiality level. But at the end of the day, it will always be a subjective judgment. And it will always be a subjective judgment based upon who is doing the reporting. Now, in some situations, you are quite lucky in that you might have access to the people that you're reporting to. And of course, the obvious or the intuitive thing to do there would be to go and ask the people you're reporting to and say to them, well, what would you think is a significant error? What level of significance do you want me to report on? But often as someone auditing information, you don't have that luxury. You can't, or it's very difficult at least, to go to a group of shareholders and say, well, what would you think is material? For example, what do you think is a material error in the financial statements? They wouldn't necessarily know. They wouldn't necessarily be able to make that judgment. And of course, in a business, you could have thousands and thousands of individual shareholders who would each have different opinions. So often it's left to the person doing the reporting to choose that materiality level subjectively. So they'll need some benchmarks. And we'll be looking at those again later on in the podcast. So the concept of materiality is very relevant to the auditor, because auditors will often report on the validity of information, financial information and non-financial information, and they will benchmark whether the information is valid or not based upon this assessment of the materiality level. Materiality is also relevant to other individuals. If you're preparing information, you want to know what's significant so that you can report at the right level. If you were, for example, presenting information to people, you'd want to know how much analysis they would want to see. So you'd have to think about what the materiality level was to decide how much, how detailed that level of information should be. But primarily, the people who are concerned with materiality do tend to be auditors. So just focusing on financial materiality for a moment. Financial materiality is where somebody reviewing financial information, an auditor, let's say, picks a financial value and basically says anything below that financial value will not be material. And anything above that financial value will be material, and I will report upon it. So if there's an error, if I pick a materiality level of £1 million, then an error of 200,000, although that's significant to me as an individual, because the auditor has said the materiality is £1 million, the auditor will not report on that level of error. Of course, he'll still try and find out why the error has happened, and obviously might want to see whether the error is systemic, whether it recurs. But as an individual one-off error, the auditor will not report on that. Obviously, once he finds it, the other thing he will do is he'll tell the organisation so they can correct it, but he will not report on it to whoever he's reporting to because he's picked a materiality level of £1 million. If anything, if he finds an error of £1.5 million, then he will report on that error. And he may report that the process is not working properly or that the financial information is not valid. In the commercial sector, financial materiality can be linked to sales, revenue, turnover, or it can be linked to profit. So just as a couple of rough benchmarks, you may choose a materiality level of anywhere between 0.5% and 1% of revenue. That might be a good guide to use. Or you might choose, let's say, 5% of profit. That might also be a good guide to use. It may be that in some organisations you have a fairly small profit and loss account compared to the balance sheet. So you may decide to base your materiality level on net assets and pick a percentage of net assets as your materiality figure. And of course, in the public sector, which we'll deal with specifically in the second podcast, your materiality level will be a percentage of expenditure that you might pick there. So that's dealing with financial materiality when looking at financial information. What about materiality when we're looking at non-financial information? Well, when we're auditing or assessing non-financial information, then we need to take a different approach. So for example, if we were looking at the results of a process being performed, what we would be looking for would be errors in the processing function. We might be looking, for example, at a purchase ledger system where there are 1 million invoices processed every year. And what we will do is we will pick a sample of those invoices, only a relatively small sample perhaps, maybe 30, 60, 90 invoices, and we will be looking for an error rate within those invoices above which we will report back to our client. So let's say we picked 90 invoices and we checked those 90 invoices for things like authorization. Have the invoices all been authorized? If we find that one hasn't been authorized, we want to investigate why. If we investigate that and we find that is a complete one-off error, then we may not report on it. If we find, however, that that is a systemic error and it's likely to reoccur throughout the whole population, the whole number of invoices, those 1 million invoices that have been processed for the year, then we're going to start to get concerned and we may indeed extend our sample. And if it does constantly reoccur, then we may conclude that that process for authorising invoices is not working properly. Now, I've mentioned some sample sizes and picking a sample size is important. You pick sample sizes from populations. The population in my last example would be 1 million invoices and you need to pick a sample. So where do we decide, or how do we decide how many items to pick in our sample from that total population of purchase ledger invoices? Well, we may use statistical techniques. The statistical techniques we may use as a subject for a whole further series of podcasts, but there are statistical techniques available that will help you decide what is a significant number of invoices to pick in a sample. And it can actually be quite small. It may be as small as 90 invoices from a population of a million. The idea being that statistically, if you pick those samples from throughout the population, then if there is a systemic error, which are the systemic errors are the ones that you're really concerned with, if there's a systemic error, then picking 90, even though the population might be a million, there's a good chance of finding one example at least of that error in your sample. Okay, so there's a good introduction to the concept of materiality and what it means and how to apply that concept both to financial and non-financial populations of items that you may be reviewing. And just to finish with, materiality and the use of materiality is actually regulated. And in the UK, if you're looking for rules on materiality, the Auditing Practices Board in the UK validates international standards on auditing. And there is an international standard on auditing, or an ISA, number 320, which covers materiality. And within there, if you want to find some more detail on materiality, you might want to have a look at that standard. The references in that standard cover both the public sector and the private sector, specifically paragraphs A2 and A9 of that standard cover the public sector materiality. There is also another technical document called Practice Note 10, which is a document for central government public sector auditors. And within there is guidance on materiality. And we will be looking in a little bit more detail at that guidance, specifically in the podcast on the public sector. So materiality is a really important concept whenever you're reviewing financial or non-financial information. The concept is helpful in that when we're preparing a review of information and we're looking to see whether the information is valid, the materiality level that we set is our benchmark. If we find errors in the information that are below our materiality level, then our conclusion is that whatever it is we're looking at is fine, whether it's financial information or non-financial information, let's say the operation of a process. If we find an error level that's above our materiality level, then our conclusion is that this process or this information is not fine, and we will then report to the person who's asked us to perform the review in the first instance. We'll report that the process or the financial information isn't valid. And that's the importance of materiality. That's all for today. My name's Steve Carlisle from Clearly Training. Thanks very much for listening, and goodbye.